Welcome to this edition of KPTZ's Nature Now. I'm your host, Nan Evans, and we are broadcasting from Port Townsend, Washington State, on the Quimper Peninsula. If you happen to be local, you will know about the bluffs of Fort Worden that loom over any walks along North Beach. Lift your eyes away from the sea and up to the bluffs or across the waters. The geological stories of our area are laid out in front of you and on the horizon. Can you read or imagine these stories of deep past times and more recent glacial periods? Well, my guest today is Tim Lawson. He's a local Port Townsend geologist, and he'll help us explore the clues and knit together the patterns of this area's geological history. Currently, Tim is the vice president of the board of Jefferson Land Trust and chairman of the board of managers for the Chimicum Ridge Community Forest. Tim is also a trained field biologist. I learned about Tim's fascination with geology one winter several years ago. I was walking at North Beach, gazing at the Fort Worden Bluff face, and there was Tim, waving his arms in a massive explanation of bluff geology to a visiting friend of his. Today's program emerged out of that chance meeting. Well, Tim and I are in the KPTZ studios at Fort Worden, but in our minds, we can visualize those tall sandy bluffs looming over North Beach. And if we're looking across the strait to the east and the northeast, we'll see similar bluffs along the western shore of Whidbey Island. And then if we look across to the north and the northwest, we can see the outlines of the rocky San Juan Islands and Vancouver Islands. So that's our sort of quick geographic setting in our minds. So to begin our conversation, Tim, I want to ask you to help set some broad context of the forces and the time scales that contribute to the geological history of the area, from the, you know, the real deep time events and forces to the things we see or can see almost on a yearly or sometimes even daily basis. Mm-hmm. So set us a geological time reference.
I mean, it'd be easy to go back many hundreds of millions of years, but let's just go back 100 million years.
Okay. I mean, that's a blink in the history, but that's good enough.
Mm-hmm. And really the history of the west coast of North America is one of repeated collisions of igneous provinces, island arcs, riven continents, time and time and time again.
And that's all tectonic movement.
That's all related to plates. That's the big movement. Yeah. It's subduction, it's plate migration, it's spreading ridges. It's all of that. And when we look across to the north or to the northwest at Vancouver Island, we're seeing Wrangellia, which is a continent that collided with the west coast of North America about 100 million years ago.
Okay.
And if we can really stretch our necks and sort of look around Artillery Hill and see the Olympic Mountains, that's where something the size of Iceland, or perhaps even bigger, collided with the west coast of North America.
So it's a different collision.
Yeah. So that's just two of maybe dozens of collisions that have happened along this coast.
Pretty complex, then.
It really is. And I think that's a good backdrop to think about, because what I think it means is that the area is kind of riddled with faults and with evidence of tectonism.
And certainly if you look at fault maps, like just in the Strait of Juan de Fuca, there are lines everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a major fault zone between us and Whidbey Island, known as the South Whidbey Island Fault Zone. And yes, there's been activity on that relatively recently. Mm. But we can also see evidence of that, those tectonic forces, actually as we walk along the beach. And I think that's going to be part of what we'll look at.
Okay. So that's our sort of big background piece, that was very complex plate history, bits and pieces colliding.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now take us to the Ice Age.
Well, the Ice Age.
Ages.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can talk about the Pleistocene, which is roughly 2.5 million years long.
Okay, so that's, so we had 100 million in our sort of tectonic frame. 2.5 million to 12,000 or so years ago.
Yeah, and a lot of that geological, that glacial history is obscured to us because the subsequent glaciations have erased some of that history or in some ways emphasized some of that history. But a lot of it is hiding from us, so we have to
I heard someone describe that as the various glaciers were like bulldozers going over the previous glacier's impact. Is that a way to think about it?
Yeah, that's certainly one way of thinking about it. But one of the things I think we can see in this area is that the glaciers didn't act like a bulldozer. They actually left some of the topography that was existing. So it wasn't like it smeared it flat like you'd think a bulldozer does. We can see sign of the topography that pre-existed the glaciers.
But then let's just kind of fast forward and pick up the forces that are acting now.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
I mean, that's a good question. I think what's affecting the topography around here is largely sea level change. And really, I mean not sea level change that we're anticipating. But if you go back to the end of the glaciation when sea level was much, much lower, and the weight of the glaciers forced the land down.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time as that land was forced down, sea level at the peak of the glaciation was about 300 feet lower than it is today.
Because so much of the water was tied up in the ice.
Right. Yeah. So the ice had to start to melt for the sea level to rise. And as the glaciers receded, that took the weight off the land and the land started to rise. But the recovery of the land relative to the increase in sea level, it was doing this dance.
So give us an idea of what the scale of that rebound is. Are we talking few feet, many feet, inches?
I think we're talking hundreds of feet.
Hundreds of feet. Wow.
Yeah. So if you study the LIDAR imagery, which is this laser scanning that can, you know, planes tie a drone behind them and do this laser scanning. And if you analyze those results, you can differentiate between the tops of the trees and the surface of the land.
Right.
And that LIDAR is incredibly revealing. For example, on places on Artillery Hill, you can see successive little beach lines right on the top of Artillery Hill and on the top of McCurdy Point and at places in Fort Flagler. So this is where the land was coming up through the sea, or the sea was dropping.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't tell which,
that,
but you
yeah.
can see that these are these concentric beaches in the LIDAR imagery.
So how significant in this, in a geological sense, are things like bluff collapse due to erosion, either wave or storms, or other sorts of more short-term?
Well, I have difficulty thinking short-term.
I know, you're jealous, right?
Because if you actually look at the underwater topography going out north, from North Beach, you'll see there's a wave cut platform coming across to, you know, the current beach line. And I forget the distances, but you can go, I think, 3 or 4 miles out, and you've just got that constant platform that just gets shallower as it comes towards the coastline. And what I think that indicates is this dance between sea level. Mm-hmm. So the land was rising, the sea was rising, but the sea level really only came into its pretty much its current level about 6,000 years ago.
Hmm.
So there was a time before that when it was lower, and so it just kept cutting over time, that platform. So that platform's very significant.
To me, it's really significant to think about it being a platform. And then the depth drops dramatically. Doesn't it? And particularly if you're looking at, you know, places on either side of Admiralty Head where you get in the deep trough of the Puget Sound.
Right. But to me, I think what's more important is that that shows that the bluffs at Fort Worden have retreated 3.5 miles.
Oh.
So the original shape of the coastline
was quite a bit different.
It was a long way away.
So for listeners who don't have the advantage of being local in our Port Townsend area here on the Quimper Peninsula, let's take a moment or two and describe those bluffs that we're talking about as the North Beach Bluffs. Mm-hmm. For those who are local, it's pretty much the area between Kinsey Beach or so, which is just west of Point Wilson, mm-hmm. out to, for talking purposes today, it's out to the county park, mm-hmm. but the same geology kind of goes further west, I believe, in round numbers. How tall are those sandy bluffs from the beach?
I think they max out about 180 feet.
180? Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm terrible at estimating things like that.
Well, I had to go and look at a map.
Yeah, right. And then there are places, certainly, where you get to the park that it's,
you know, 10, 12 feet.
Yeah.
So they're variable height.
As I think about describing the bluffs, as I walk along, I see sand, I see gravel, I see mixed deposits, I see layers that are relatively horizontal and others that slope or run into each other. Mm-hmm. That's what I want some help with, kind of figuring out how we use those as a way of understanding what's happened here. What do we see? What clues do we see that would help us understand the geological history?
That's a great question, because it really ties in to, well, I think, what we're going to see when we do the walk. At the easternmost part of the Fort Worden Bluffs, at the base of the cliff there, there is a vegetation-rich layer.
Yeah, it's really dark compared mm-hmm. to everything else.
Yeah, and a lot of people refer to it as a peat. It's not a peat. If you actually prize out little bits of plant, it's a reed. There's bits of reed and there's bits of wood in there.
Yeah, I remember being interested in actually being able to see that there were bits of wood in there. So approximate age maybe on that level?
I'm going to say around 200,000 years old.
Okay, I'm having to think of that as a non-geology mind. I've got to sort of pause a moment and think, 200,000, where do I place that on my...
So if we say that the entire glacial episode, you know, the ice age, as it were, was 2.5 million years long,
this is towards the end.
I mean, it's, you know, sort of 90% of the way through the entire ice age sequence.
Okay, so then going up from that...
Mm-hmm.
As in up the bluffs. Describe what we see and how that tells us about different things that have happened.
Well, above that, you've got a mixture. Immediately above it, you've got some sort of fairly muddy sands, which I think of as backwater.
Is that the stuff that can be kind of swirly? No, okay.
Well, no. So there are, sorry, yes, no. Yes, yes, there are swirly bits in it, and... The swirly bits, I think, are really fascinating because they're particularly at the base of the cliff, and we've got to be really lucky if we've had some really good storms and it's exposed the very, very bottom of the cliff, because there you will see beds that were clearly a sort of very fine lamina of silt, clay, and a little bit of sand.
Really small particles.
And then they get... And they've got good distinction, so you can see some dark bands and some lighter bands, but they get completely contorted, twisted into all sorts of weird shapes. And I believe that that's evidence of a prior megaquake.
Oh.
You've heard about...
Well, the big one, that kind of quake.
We kind of get these megaquakes every 500 years. Mm-hmm. So... At some point, we should be seeing some evidence of those in the geological record.
Okay, so now let's keep going up a little bit. How do the layers change?
Well, that contorted layer, I think, is below that intensely vegetated layer.
Okay.
So that vegetated layer actually gets cut out as you go further west.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more of that in a minute.
And I think that's an indication of that the sands we're seeing, which I think are primarily material sediment that's being washed off the Cascades. So the Cascades are contributing all that material, and it's coming out through the Strait
that's
of Juan de Fuca.
That's because that's a lot of sand.
Well, here's something to really try and wrap your head around, and I only discovered this last year, is that the Cascades as a high mountain range maybe didn't exist till 3 or 3.5 million years ago.
I remember a conversation about that once with a geologist.
So that the Cascades as we know them are a relatively recent artifact of the forces that are acting on this area. And let's assume that they got higher than they were now, and that all that sediment that's coming off there has got to go somewhere.
Okay. And so you're thinking of that as being essentially outwash and erosion from past mountain ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Do the layers tell us anything about the period of time that that happened over, or whether there were other factors like the glaciers dumping loads of sediment?
Well, I would argue that we probably can't differentiate between some of the glacial sediment and some of the erosional sediment.
Just from examining the deposits, if
no,
you
I
can't
mean,
tell.
I don't
yeah.
think you can. But I will caveat in that I do think in one part of the walk we can differentiate sediments that are coming from a different direction because they've got a different lithology in them. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself.
Okay, don't do that. That's a tickler. Okay.
But what we can see are things that tell us about the hydrological environment that the material is being deposited in. For example, when we, at the bottom of the section, we see all that vegetative material, we see all that fine sediment, that's happening in a relatively tranquil environment.
Right.
It can either be that that environment was a long way away from the source of water, or it was, you know, in the back end of a oxbow.
Yeah.
Or for some sort of, you know, where the
shallow, quiet bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because if you think about any fluvial system, the rivers are just wandering all mm-hmm. over the, you know, the river valley and out into the delta. So they're constantly moving. So the bed load is being distributed, you know, broadly across that.
Okay. Now, but that's not the only kind of layers. We see some layers that have got, you know, cobble-sized and, mm-hmm. and even bigger rocks. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's going to be a different hydrological environment.
Mm-hmm.
What has gone on there?
Well, this is where I may be heretical.
Oh, I love it. Let's be heretical.
So at the very west end, we're coming into North Beach Country Park, there is a big, big channel. And in that channel, there are blocks of some solidified, silty material that we actually see up in the bluffs.
You do see, yes. They look like blocks. They're sort of, yeah.
And
they're big and they've got angles
big.
On them. And
yeah. And so here's my heresy. I argue that those were deposited by outbursts from glacial lake Bretts to the south of us. So when a glacier advances, the weight of it actually depresses the land.
Mm-hmm.
And when it retreats, that depressed land can bounces. Fill in with water, and it can create a glacial lake, and that can be dammed. And one of the things that we know that down in Chimacum is that Beaver Valley is deeply incised through the glacial sediments of that area. And that is commonly interpreted as a draining of this glacial lake to okay. the south of us. And I want to argue that like many other glacial lakes, it drained episodically. And there was maybe a big flood that went out through Beaver Valley into the south end of Discovery Bay. But my hypothesis is that other floods just went due north. rather than taking that path off to the northwest.
And so when you say episodic, I can kind of envision blocks of sediment moving at a if there's a breakthrough. And that to me would mean it's kind of it's an event. It's mm-hmm. a thing that's happening. But other times it's a more gentle, regular kind of flow outward, or the notion of the blocks is intriguing.
Well,
to me.
Blocks are just something that was moved when there was a burst of extremely high velocity of water just moving through that mm-hmm. area. And I would guess...
Which is actually the kind of thing we know happened in the Columbia and Lake Missoula. Things came through at a...
Pow! Yeah, and, yeah, but it wasn't just one flood.
Right.
It was multiple, yeah. multiple floods. And I want to make the argument that we may be seeing some of the things that represent multiple floods, because those same sort of layers that have very jumbled blocks in them continue in the cliffs almost all the way around to Cape George. So we need a fairly big picture story to tell how that happened.
Okay, let me ask you another picture story. In a number of places along those bluffs, you can see some may be horizontal running into one that's at a slant, mm-hmm. or they kind of run into it and crumple something. It's easy to envision the horizontal deposition. What are we seeing when we see those kind of slants and cracks and run-ins?
Well, a lot of what you see in the cliff there is you've got bedding inclined at 20 to 30 mm-hmm. degrees, and that's something known as foreset beds.
Say that again?
Foreset, F-O-R-E-S-E-T.
Okay, foreset. Okay.
Beds. And those are a function of just the way a channel meanders. So if you think of a channel meandering, and as that channel progresses, it's meandered and it starts to close the meander, it will just deposit the material on the face that it left beforehand.
Hmm.
And so those are very normal sandstone fluvial environment depositional structures.
Okay. I'm now feeling the need to actually be in front of the bluff instead of having it in mm-hmm. my mind, kind of piecing all this together. You mentioned earlier that if you were walking west along the beach, mm-hmm. we would start with at the base of the bluff was that old vegetative mm-hmm. layer, and you said maybe 200,000 years mm-hmm. ago or so. As you continue to walk mm-hmm. west, and by the time you get to North Beach, that's not what the bottom layer is.
No.
What's going on there, or what went on there?
So it's interesting because, well, and it depends where you are on the beach, but I described that big channel structure, and that big channel structure kind of dies out, but beneath it, there's a till, and then above the till, there is what's known as a glaciomarine deposit. And that's where ice was floating in the water. And what happened at the end of the major glaciation, and we're talking the Vashon glaciation here, was...
That was the last big one here? Or...
Yes. I mean, there's some details of that that I still don't fully understand. And, but I'm sort of clinging to a story which I think makes sense, was that if we imagine that the glacier had come down the Strait of Georgia and then swept across the Strait of Georgia, divided into one lobe going out the Strait of Juan de Fuca, mm-hmm. the other one going down Puget Sound, and then as the supply of ice got cut off and sea levels started to rise, the ice that would have been in the Strait of Juan de Fuca would have been lifted off the bed of the Juan de Fuca and rafted out. So what that did was interrupt the ice supply from the north.
Hmm.
So then we have open seawater in the area around Port Townsend. While as maybe as close as Chimicum may still have had a significant depth of ice over it. And those icebergs, essentially, as they melted into the water, the coarse sediment would have been dropped perhaps in the deeper water, but the finer sediment would accumulate in this finer material. Because when we see that glaciomadrine drift, we see it's got a very fine blocky structure, which is saying there's a very high content of clay in it. And in places, that drift also has shells in it. So it, you can actually tell it was marine, and you can actually tell something about the temperature of the seawater from those fossils.
Again, it's like, I want to be out on the beach. I want to be looking at this. And we'll be telling people how to do that with you in shortly. But just to kind of close this comment, we had at the east end of the bluffs towards the Point Wilson area, the bottom of the bluff 200,000 years ago. The bottom of the bluff, and the bluff is much smaller by the time you reach the North Beach County Park. What's the age of that stuff?
It may only be 13,000 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating that you can walk, and you're walking in a level area, but you're going forward in time, hundreds of thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to leave listeners with that little mind-blowing thought. And thank Tim for joining us. And add that, as I mentioned a little earlier in the program, local listeners can join Tim in the field later this month on February the 21st, this is 2026, to explore and learn about the bluffs in person. So you don't have to imagine this totally in your brain. That's an outing through the local Natural History Society. Again, the date is Saturday, February the 21st. And we'll be exploring all kinds of clues and trying to knit together patterns and tell stories.
Geology is all about telling stories.
I sort of like that concept. The outing will gather at Kinzie Beach in Fort Worden. It's about a 4.5-hour walk with lots of exploration time. It's only maybe a mile or mile and a half or so, in, 2 miles in distance, west to the county park. And if you want details and directions about how to register, they're available on the Natural History Society website, which is olympicnature.org. And if you want to go direct to the information on outings, it's olympicnature.org/hikes-outings. So thanks so much, Tim. I'm looking forward to this actually trip to the beach to try to get my brain around some of these things.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I want to thank everyone for listening and hope you've enjoyed our program and have learned more about the natural community where we live. I hope you're back next week, too.